The next steps in defense acquisition reform may come from the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee. Its permanent subcommittee on investigations asks experts from all points of the federal acquisition community to tell them where the committee should go next to streamline defense acquisition. Beth McGrath of Deloitte is former Deputy Chief Management Officer at the Department of Defense and one of the contributors to the committee's efforts. She worked to institute what she called a cost culture when she was DCMO. She didn't use that phrase in her comments to the committee, but I asked her if that concept was kind of written between the lines.
I really think the themes, at least throughout my response, include both a cost culture, really understanding sort of all aspects of the program, and also an enterprise perspective.
You write that that understanding the costs involve not simply, you say, the budgeted amounts for sustainment, but all costs associated with execution. Where do people go wrong in getting that balance incorrect?
Well, I think that when we look at the program costs, it's very easy to look at the budgeted amounts because they are presented, frankly, in the budget that way. But to really gather the total cost of a program, if you go back to, you know, terminology that the department used to use, this whole concept of total cost of ownership, it really is exactly what it says, the total cost of executing not only a business area, but also, you know, how the IT fits into that. And so it's a much broader conversation than just talking about, you know, an IT program or an acquisition program.
The committee wanted your input about developing core competencies in the acquisition workforce. And you write, adding or increasing industry personnel to the acquisition training conducted at the Defense Acquisition University would provide a real-time industry perspective to the cost conversation. I have to say I'm surprised that hasn't been going on now. Is there some sort of resistance that you detected at DAU or inside the Pentagon as a whole, or has the industry so far been hesitant to participate in that part of it, or what has the holdup been so far to prevent that from happening up till now?
Well, I think that the desire to have sort of an industry perspective is certainly something the Defense Department is and has been continually looking for. I think that industry too, again, I've only been out for about 10 months now, but my experience says that, you know, industry also wants to be part of the conversation. When we're teaching acquisition, you know, skills to government personnel, you know, as part of a training course, I'm just not sure that they've figured out, you know, how to achieve the right balance of industry and government in the same classroom. You know, how do you ensure, you know, a level playing field in terms of, you know, industry involvement? I don't think it's insurmountable, but I frankly can't specifically answer why we haven't done a better job of bringing the communities together, especially in a classroom setting where there isn't a, you know, sort of an advantage one way or another.
Teaching acquisition skills to workforce. You write about assessing the value of that training and being able to understand a return on investment. And that's a ROI is a theme throughout a lot of your comments to the subcommittee. Are there metrics in place that allow us to measure return on investment for training in the acquisition area? And what kind of a timeline are you able to do that under when we have anywhere from a 5 to a 7 year window, I'm told, between the time someone starts down the acquisition path as a career and the time that he or she is able to go out on his or her own and really execute, function well independently?
Well, I think that there are certainly metrics in place that measure the amount of training that takes place, or, you know, throughput in classrooms and, you know, do we have trained individuals on certain programs? I really do think more time and attention should be spent on, and then what happens? You know, do we then have more successful programs because of, you know, what we're teaching and how we're teaching? And, you know, and I think they can be measured earlier than, you know, 5 to 7 years because people are part of sort of an acquisition team, if you will. They're certainly a program manager and it takes sort of more time and experience to be sort of trained and ready for a job like that. But there are many aspects to a program, I think, that that would benefit from more measurement to really assess, you know, how's it going and are we headed there in the right direction?
Heading in the right direction implies that you have people in those various areas to be able to manage programs and the overall acquisition effort in the right direction. You talked to the committee about some changes that you recommend to building that mid-level career workforce in the acquisition community. How does the pay scale that they currently live under impact, in your view, the ability to get them and the ability to keep them?
Was something along the lines of having a different sort of pay scale to really get the best, to recruit the best and retain the best program managers. Because I do find that those are really hard jobs. And, you know, there's a complexity of just the sort of the program itself, but all of the, you know, communication required internally and then externally that I think it warrants sort of additional pay. Because I think all of us who have been in the acquisition space know that, you know, when we find a good program manager, we really, really want to retain them. And it's difficult, you know, to do. And providing more incentives for recruit and then retention, I think, would be extremely beneficial. I've said this for years, by the way, that we ought to pay program managers more because those are really, really difficult jobs.
Beth McGrath of Deloitte, the former Deputy Chief Management Officer at the Department of Defense, writing for the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations on Defense Acquisition Reform. And I can't remember, Beth, the last time that a document on defense acquisition reform spoke to my heart, but you managed to do it in this because you write about celebrating successes that programs have and documenting them and communicating widely about them and not just letting the word get out about the failures. Why do you think, and this is not just in the Defense Department either, by the way, it's all across the government, why do you think agencies, especially acquisition shops, are so reticent to talk about their successes and the things they did well and take credit when things go well?
Well, I don't know, frankly, if it's unique to the acquisition community. I mean, if you look at news in general, most of it's not positive. So what makes the news is sort of usually sort of a bad event that's newsworthy. I think the culture around, you know, the stories to tell are both sort of good news stories and then, you know, I'll say also when things aren't as pleasant or, you know, positive. And I just think that, you know, we unfortunately, generally speaking, take sort of the good news for granted. We just sort of go along as opposed to actually stopping and celebrating, you know, achieving milestones in the same way we would, you know, talk about something that didn't go right. So I really think it's just culture around, you know, news is more interesting when it's not as positive, sadly saying.
Your former colleague, Frank Kendall, is undertaking a review of regulations and statutes and policies that govern major weapons systems acquisitions. And he the goal is to be able to present to Congress some things that they could do to remove cost from the weapons system procurement chain to be able to cut costs. You propose that body of work could be reduced as much as 40% to 50%. Do you have any confidence that Congress would be willing to take that much of their previous work out of the system to be able to recover that much cost?
Well, so in my 40% to 50% is sort of statutes, regulations, and policies. I mean, unfortunately, we tend to write, you know, all three statutes, regulations, and policies to sort of fix a specific problem and sometimes don't take into account, you know, the effect of the whole. And we sort of pile on but rarely take from. And, you know, my suggestion was to really take a 100% review of what are the policies in place and are they really adding value. And, you know, I put I'll just say a stretch goal out there. There are so many policies. I feel like, you know, we a decrease in by a significant amount. And I frankly don't think 40 or 50% is that unreasonable. Again, if you look at the statutes, the policies, and the regulations, which are not just generated by Congress, as you know, it's the things that the agencies, I'll say add to their interpretation of the statute. And it happens at multiple levels within an organization.
I want to wrap up this discussion of the remarks that you made to the committee by talking about requirements. I hear uniform officials at DOD, civilian officials, people who have had experience in the building like you and are no longer there, think tankers, just about everybody involved in the process mentions requirements at some point in time. How big of an issue is the requirements issue in the acquisition process, Beth, and how important are changes of some sort to the requirements process before we get into what specifically you're recommending to the committee?
Well, I think that I don't know how many studies have been done, but I'm virtually positive that every single study says we need to do something about requirements to the point you just made. And I would say in my personal experience, really having a clear definition of what it is, I'll say, you want, what the user community needs, tied to sort of a mission set. In language that is unambiguous. So it really needs to, I'll say, be a lot clearer and less ambiguous around sort of the need, because then it will result in, you know, a better written contract, better performance measures, people understand what the expectations are. And so I do think that sort of all roads lead to start with a good requirement being written.
What is your hope that the committee will do with the feedback that you gave them on these questions that you answered for them, Beth?
Well, I'm certain the committee, I'll just say, asked people for their opinions so that they could, gather a lot of different perspectives and then take some concrete action. I do think the question around, could we streamline statutes, policy, and regulations? I really hope that is taken aboard. You mentioned what Mr. Kendall is doing. I applaud that. The Congress as well. I think they are positioned to do that. Because at the end of the day, we all want the same thing, which is a capable, ready military, be it either from a military equipment perspective, sort of the MDAP programs or the support information technology systems that enable some of the missions that happen. So I think we're all aligned in terms of we want better outcomes. And so my hope is that both the Congress and the government will continue to pay attention to this topic and take some action.
Thanks for your input very much, Beth, and thanks for talking about the remarks that you made to the committee. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.